This 4th of July weekend, a lot of patriotic American music will be heard. However, one of America's greatest composers will get very little airtime, even though he wrote a piece called 4th of July. Charles Edward Ives was born in 1874. He lived until 1954, and Weekend Edition's classical music commentator Robert Greenberg joined us from the studios of KQED in San Francisco to tell us why we may want to reconsider listening to this piece over the holiday.
Ives is perhaps the first great, truly American composer, in that Ives drew from the American tradition of popular music. He drew from his classical training. He drew from his New England upbringing a tremendous amount of experience. And despite the modernity of his music, it's one of the paradoxes of Ives, the music basically describes his upbringing in this kind of idealized, almost mythologized New England surrounding in the late 19th century. So Ives is not just the first American composer to really draw on American materials in his music, but he was such a great experimenter and, as a wealthy man, such a great supporter of other musicians that he has become an icon of, I think, what American music should be and what a benevolent patron of the arts should be as well.
You say this piece describes the 4th of July from dawn to dusk. Does it follow a particular narrative?
It does. It's program music in the 19th century sense, in that it is intended to give us a sensibility of what the 4th of July is all about from dawn to dusk. But it's a very interesting approach. It's just a six-minute piece. It's the third movement, by the way, of a four-movement piece called Holiday Symphonies, which is supposed to describe, according to Ives, a boy's experience, a New England boy's experience of these holidays. And Ives actually gave us quite an extensive description, which I'd be happy to read if you'd like me to.
Sure, go ahead.
It's a boy's fourth. No historical orations, no patriotic grand eloquences by grown-ups, no program in his yard. But he knows what he's celebrating better than most of the country politicians. And he goes at it his own way, with a patriotism near akin to nature than jingoism. His festivities start in the quiet of the night and grow raucous with the sun. Everybody knows what it's like. Cannon on the green, village band on Main Street, firecrackers, shanks mixed on comets, strings around big toes, church bells, lost fingers, fifes, clam chowder, a prize fight, drum corps, burnt shins, parades, in and out of step, saloons all closed, though more drunks than usual, baseball games, pistols, mobbed umpire, red, white, and blue, runaway horse, and the day ends with the skyrocket over the church steeple, just after the annual fireworks explosion sets the town hall on fire. Well, that's the program. And, of course, it's a mishmash of experiences, and that's what Ives' music is all about. It's experiential.
You described Ives' musical philosophy as transcendental. Where do we hear it in this music?
His philosophy that all things are related under the great oversoul of the universe allows him to be inclusive in his music, to stack all this unlike stuff together to create a whole a thousand times greater than the sum of its parts. One might listen to parts of the 4th of July and say, oh my goodness, what a cacophonous chunk of noise. How could anyone do that? Others might listen to it and say, whoa, that is so fabulous. The associations are creating whole new perceptions in my ear.
So the music that is kind of jarring to listen to in this piece, this was intentional on Ives' part.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, Ives objected mightily to what he considered beauty in music. That is, he felt, and I've got another quote, and I'll just read it because it tells us where he's coming from. He wrote, "Beauty in music is too often confused with something that lets the ear lie back in an easy chair. When a new or unfamiliar work is accepted as beautiful on its first hearing, its fundamental quality is one that tends to put the mind to sleep," unquote. For Ives, beauty had to do with substance. It didn't have to do with mere prettiness. And he had zero tolerance, Leanne, for the wimps and mollycoddles who shuddered, or even worse, hissed at new music. He was famous for standing up at concerts and bellowing at just such offenders, "Stand up and take your dissonance like a man." So there's a lot of machismo in Ives's music, and there's a lot of machismo in this American culture that produced him. One of the things that makes Ives interesting and very different was that he was an amateur composer. Now, he was a man of professional ability, but he never composed for a living, and he refused to take money for his compositions when they started getting popular. He was an insurance executive, and that's how he made his career, and that's how he made a lot of money, as an insurance executive. He believed, like Thoreau believed, that the best way to proceed is not to make men buy your baskets, but rather to create a circumstance by which you didn't have to sell them. So he felt free to compose whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted, however he wanted, and never had to respond to market issues or the need simply to make money and please an audience. And so he didn't.
Music historian Robert Greenberg. He's with San Francisco Performances in the Teaching Company, which markets recorded lectures in the arts and sciences. He joined us from member station KQED in San Francisco. Thanks as always, Robert.
My great pleasure.
You can hear a complete performance of Charles Ives' 4th of July by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra at the music section of our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.